Welcome back to the ATL Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. It's another Friday episode. We bring you these every Friday with the famous, Atlanta famous, infamous, and just about anybody else that I fancy. Today's guest, Tamika Risch. We will get to her momentarily. Let us first talk about today's sponsor, Beat the Bomb. Beat the Bomb started in Brooklyn a couple years ago, and they're bringing their immersive experience here to Atlanta. I just did it, and I'm not even an escape room guy. I went to check it out because I know the owner and some other folks that work there, who I actually interviewed for this show, which will be on shortly. But as a real-life video game, it's Beat the Bomb, the next generation of immersive group entertainment. They've got bar, they've got food, and a really great time. I went with the fun kids from Save the Video Store, who I also just had on the show. We had a great time. Go check out beatthebomb.com/Atlanta. You play these four games, which are all team-based, which lead up to this big last part with Beat the Bomb. My team actually did beat the bomb, but we still got blasted because it's super cool to do that. And you get fun photos and all that great stuff. Go check them out at beatthebomb.com/Atlanta. That's beatthebomb.com. So today's guest is Tamika Risch. She is the Vice President of Game and Event Experience at AMB Sports and Entertainment, which is a long way to say she works for the Falcons and the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I almost said the Dome. She works for the Falcons and the Stadium and make all the great events happen. And you will hear about all of that and a lot about where she came from and the different experiences she got leading up to that. And I think it's a great, great chat. I think you'll learn a lot about her and you'll have some fun. I think a great lesson in this is there's no one right way to get to where you want to go. And I think Tamika exemplifies that. Let's get to it. Away we go. So I feel like the NBA kind of led the way with, okay, all the rules, like let's rewrite the rules here and give people just cool stuff. The concept of the schedule reveal has become a thing. And it wasn't when you started, I'm guessing, however long ago, they probably just put it out in the AJC, here's who we're playing, right?
Yeah, so interestingly, the NFL schedule release is one of the top viewed content pieces in all of sports. It will get higher ratings than most of the other four actual games. It's controlled at a league level, and the release time, and it is a back and forth, obviously, that teams, if I could have the schedule for next year's NFL season today, like I would be in heaven, because then you can actually plan. But they want to make it this TV moment. And so probably, I don't remember how many years ago, teams started trying to make it a local moment as well as a TV moment. You know, obviously in the NFL, TV is our bread and butter. That's where you can get 72,000 fans into the stadium on Sunday. But our audience is way bigger than that for any of our teams. So, but then as the digital side of media has, you know, grown and revolutionized, even how people are consuming TV has changed, right? Like when I started, been here, this is my 18th season, this, you know, the digital side, it was called new media. That was the name of the department because it was new. Like, and, you know, the things we were working on were very different than what we're doing today. And, I'm not sure how predictive the analytics were around where we were headed and how fast we were headed there from consumers. You know, I've been streaming my TV content, I think, since, I want to say, 2014-ish. And I think more and more users are getting their TV content through, you know, basically Wi-Fi access. And that is a huge change. We would have thought satellite or cable would have been the two consumers. And
right.
Now, that is drastically shifting. And so the more we can talk to our consumers day-to-day, real-time, and localize that content, the more successful we are. So schedule release has become a big deal. But the NFL season, fortunately, is 365. So the Senior Bowl is a big deal. The Combine is a big deal. Schedule release is a big deal. We have all these milestones, OTAs, rookie minicamp. It's a big deal for people. Then we get a little break in the summer for about 6 weeks of players go home and NFL content is kind of low. Baseball has their all-star game during that time. The NBA is doing their summer league. And then we ramp back up for and obviously for us, Atlanta United that's the peak of their midpoint. So international break falls in that time, and then the Falcons season ramps up, and we head back into kickoff and then the actual season. And so the one thing the NFL has done a great job is they have a season that's about 6 or 7 months long, but they've developed content that is 365.
Right.
And I think, that model is envied by a lot of other leagues, because most other leagues are playing a much longer schedule and then still trying to get content in there. And so to have that, half a year schedule and still be able to get 365 content is a credit to what the NFL has done as a league entity in driving that value to their fans.
Well, when I grew up, baseball and football were the biggest sports. NBA certainly was not.
Yeah.
And then the NBA has been this juggernaut that I feel like the other, like, football is king. I don't want to say it's always going to be king because we don't know, but football is sort of always, like, the last however many years, 30, like, is it, right? Yeah, Sundays are it. Like,
so currently football, if you look at the top TV programs of the last year, the top 50, I think 48 of them were NFL games. So there's no comparison to the size and scale. No other entity competes with the NFL at that scale. The NBA does an amazing job of being innovative.
Right.
They don't have the numbers. They don't have the fan base. They don't have the size, but they're incredibly aggressive in their approach to the way they do their business.
Right.
And I love watching the risks they take. And it is fun. I love the Hawks. I love what they bring, the energy they bring to the market. When other teams in our market do well, like the Braves run they had last year, like, energy in Atlanta to sports is amazing energy. And I love, we all feed off of it. So, I loved what the Hawks did with their schedule release this year with the grills and, just being creative and surprising in their approach to it. So, all of that is fun, and we feed off of that competitive. Right. I think what the Braves did with their ring distribution, for every, they did, I think, 4 games where every fan that came got a championship ring, and it was a replica, and it opened, and it looked real. Like, it was a huge kudos to them in that. Like, I love to see our city do well from a sports standpoint, and
right.
Really proud of what both groups are doing.
So let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in North Carolina, a small town in Western North Carolina. Grew up playing 3 sports a year. Was as tomboy as they come, I guess. Was climbing trees and riding 4-wheelers. I had my first dirt bike in 3rd grade. Grew up in a big family. My mom was one of 14. My dad was one of 4. I thought 4 was small. Now my brother has 4 kids. I'm like, I don't know how you do it. I credit my family and where I grew up with the success I've had in life, because, that support structure, the love that I had, the understanding of how to deal with people and people from different, I mean, when you have that many kids, they're all different, and how to work and deal with different people.
So how many brothers and sisters?
So I only have 1 brother, but my mom has 14 and my dad has 4.
Okay.
So Christmas and Thanksgiving and
right.
Like, I planned events all growing up, because anytime you have a birthday party, it's, an event, just having family there.
So did you get any scholarships or did you play college ball?
Yeah. So, I went to a small private high school. So I was planning to go to a small private school to play sports. And at the last minute, my aunt went to the University of North Carolina and wanted me to apply. And so I did and got in. I made the last deadline to apply and got in, and, decided I was going to go out for the crew team. It was brand new and I just wasn't my thing.
Rowing.
Yeah. I told the coach that
I didn't think Southern schools even did that.
Yeah. So, I don't know how many ACC does it now. I know. Crew is a work, like, every practice you just, like,
you're up at 4 in the morning and on the water. I know that.
I remember. No, you're not always on the water. We were in the bottom of a sweaty old gym. Oof. On an erg machine.
Oof.
And I remember at times the coach is yelling at us and I'm like, God, it would be okay if you just let me fall off of this thing. I don't want to quit, but if I just fell off on the floor and I couldn't do it anymore, like, I'd be okay with that. Like, I mean, it was intense. And so kudos to anyone who's done that. I mean, the synchronization and the training.
But why didn't you want to stick with the ball sports?
So I actually, I wanted to do something different, and I actually left crew and went and played rugby. So I played rugby for 2 seasons at the University of North Carolina, and then I started working in football.
And they had a female rugby team?
Mm-hmm, and I knew that playing sports wasn't going to get me a career. So at that point, I was more invested in what am I going to do after college. And so I started working for the football team because I felt, you know, when I went to UNC, I wanted to be Stuart Scott. And he actually spoke at our graduation. He's at Tar Heel, as I'm sure you are aware. And so I wanted to be on SportsCenter. But as I...
RIP Stu.
As I went through the program, like, I started working for the football team doing video operations so that I could eventually, you know, to be on camera, you have to use a camera.
Was it VHS? Was it those big VHS cameras? I'm trying to remember how long ago that was.
No, it was beta. So I edited beta to beta.
Nice. We're okay.
And so that was where I started. I videoed every game and practice for the football team and did a host of other things, from checking breakfast to... But then I started working at the TV station because I wanted to get more of the media experience. And I fell in love with the team side of sport. Just the highs and the lows that you won and lost with the team. And at the TV station, you were just a critic. Like, you were, and I didn't like the experience I had there. Like, the head coach got fired when I was also working at the TV station.
What days were, I'm trying to think who was even coaching back then.
So I started right as Mac Brown left, and Carl Torbush was the head coach. And, you know, they said he was fired, and then he wasn't fired. So and all of that happened at the TV station while I was also working for the football team. And I just saw what that did on both sides. And I didn't really, that wasn't part of journalism I wanted to be part of. And then I also worked at the Carolina Hurricanes and did game production there. And I did that just to get more experience, and ultimately decided, you know, I want to go back to school and get my master's and go into the team side of sports.
Yeah.
And so decided to pursue my master's at the University of Georgia, and was there for a year, and then went to Houston, was with the Texans, started that franchise in the Super Bowl in Houston with Janet Jackson and the Streaker and all of those stories that came out of
that. No one remembers Janet Jackson.
And
actually, I wonder how, like, younger sports fan, how that is, like, because we're far enough away from it now, and we don't really talk about it. I mean, it's kind of so silly, like, considering what happens now. But I want to back up and ask you, you know, Tar Heel country is, like, you know, is a basketball school. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like Dean Smith is, like, just his shadow just has to be over the whole school. So what is that like working in the football program?
Yeah. So, Dean retired my freshman year.
Okay.
And so, you know, basketball is king at the University of
North Carolina. But then it's Roy.
And no, it was Dean. And then it was, Bill Guthridge. So Coach Guthridge was his number two, and he took over and took us to a Final Four.
Right.
And then, after Coach Guthridge was Coach Doherty, Matt Doherty came and had a very brief stint.
I would have never, if you put a gun in my head, I would have been like, oh, well, that was a succession.
No.
Amazing.
There was a very challenged gap before we got to Roy. Roy was at Kansas. And
That's right. Okay.
He did not want to leave, you know, he was very loyal to that program and what they had meant to him, and did not want to just immediately jump. But then I think the program needed him, and so I think he felt a little bit of indebted to come back, and then we had an amazing run with Roy, and now he did an amazing job, and now we've got Coach Davis. And so UNC basketball is basketball in the state of North Carolina is king. I mean, as I look at what's going on in the ACC, I just hope it doesn't impact basketball, because all of the conferences are being realigned for football purposes, and football obviously is a huge payer of bills for athletic departments. Can be a very, very costly program if not ran well, but you know, for a lot of schools, it is very important. And but for the ACC, basketball has always been the crown jewel. And I just hope, as these conference realignments, you don't lose the UNC Duke battle. You don't lose the Wake Forest. I mean,
I just feel like they're different, just different vibes, even. Because even didn't they already go through this, some of this, when they, like, with the Big East, didn't, like, some teams move, but the football team still didn't? I feel like in the old days.
I mean, they realigned some stuff, but you still have Tobacco Road playing each other.
That's what I'm saying.
But they're all still in the ACC. Now, they added people to the conference,
right?
But it hasn't disrupted the old rivals. You know, splitting up some of those Tobacco Road kind of legacy, you know, changing that ACC competitive basketball landscape is not something I'd be excited to see. But you know, the football program at UNC, like any school, is important. It is, you know, at UNC we want to compete for the Sears Cup, which is the overall most competitive athletic department. So across the board, all athletics are important. And you know about men's basketball, but women's soccer is one of the most competitive, winningest programs at UNC. And really proud of our women's soccer legacy. There was a point, I think, when I was in school, UNC women had won more championships than all other schools combined. And, you know, that's the legacy of that group.
Right.
And that 1999 World Cup, Women's World Cup team had a ton of Tar Heels on it. And, you know, so really proud of my Tar Heel roots and what that athletic department, you know, did for me and catapulting me, especially as a female. You know, I was given opportunities to pursue my dreams, and my gender didn't impact that in any ways. And I know that's not always the case. Having talked and experienced other places, that's not always the case. And I'm very appreciative of the time I had at UNC.
When you were with Houston, did you think, okay, like, I definitely want to get back over here somewhere?
Not like, you know, each place I've been, I've tried to be present there and get the most out of it. And when I was at the Texans, it was a brand new franchise. And
so that's exciting.
That was exciting. And, you know, I have to give credit to the McNair family and the leadership at the time. Jamie Roots was the president of the Texans, and they recruited the best and brightest from around the country to start that franchise. And so a lot of times you'll go into an organization and the group think is not very different because all the people are from the same place. They haven't had different life experiences. And one of the cool things about when I went to Houston is my boss was from Boston. Coworker was from Georgia. That's kind of how I ended up there. Another from Houston. We had people from, one of my good friends was from Minnesota, gone to UCLA. Another was from Ohio. Another was from Florida. Like, they brought people in from around the country. And I think that launched that franchise just to a higher level quickly because of the type of talent they brought in. And I loved, like, I learned so much in my year at the Texans. Like, I think of being here a year, and a year can vanish in a blink of an eye, but I was so young and so hungry to learn, and the people that I got to work with there just approached things differently for the time. You know, it's 2002. Like, they were very innovative for that time period, and I feel like that allowed me to move faster mentally as the innovation of the early 2000s happened.
Right.
I had already seen, yeah, I was a little ahead of the curve in what we were doing in Houston.
Right. So then from there, you immediately came here from there?
No. So when I left Houston, I lived in 5 states in 1 year. So I lived in, I was in Texas. Then I was in Georgia, moved to Texas. Then from Texas, I moved back to North Carolina. To figure out what I was going to do. I took a job in South Carolina. I had my own sports talk radio show.
Because you wanted to be Stuart Scott.
Because I wanted to be. And so when I was in Houston, actually, I was a finalist for Dream Job. And the
TV show. I watched that TV show.
So I was a finalist for that, and then I'm like, you know what? I should like.
Does that old tape exist anywhere?
No, but if you Google my name, you'll see a Forbes article, and it mentions Tamika Rich something.
You want to know the funniest thing? The guy that won, I lived in LA, and I saw him in the Verizon store like a year later, and I'm guessing I was like the only one who ever recognized him.
Yeah.
But I just had just happened to watch it, and so. I think I asked him what happened and I forgot what he told me, but, so you got to meet Stewart then?
No. So I didn't get to the, so I was a, they narrowed down. So I spent like 8 hours like that with the production crew answering questions. Like they were really into the Stewart Scott Van Pelt kind of style at that point. And they
right.
were, I was a journalism major and we had to do things, you know, by the book. And they're like, well, what are your, you know, it's like butter, it's on a roll. Like I didn't have, that was not what they teach you in school. I could not adjust fast enough to their, you know, wanting you to be more loose. And like, you know, I was doing basically news sports casting.
Right. You were all business.
Yeah. And, unfortunately I didn't make it to the round where you got to meet Stewart or any of the, you know, I was all with production
right.
folks and we had to take tests and, so anyways, that ignited my journalism dreams again. I'm like, oh, maybe I do want to do this. And so I moved to Camden, South Carolina, which is outside of Columbia, and took a job with a sports radio or sports talk station. They say, the only thing you got to do, you've got to sell ads to get your to support your show.
Right.
So I started going to Columbia trying to sell ads. You know, I got my whole speech together about how AM... You know, they're used to talk, so they don't turn off the radio when the commercials come on
because
they're already used to people talking. Like, they won't change the state. I've got this whole thing down. And I remember, like, I've been there almost 2 months. So the Texans had called me a couple of times, like, hey, are you sure you want to do this? Like, we do have this job. You can come back. I was like, no, I appreciate it, but I got to give this a shot. Like, so I go into this automotive tent place. And I got the guy, it's the far side of Columbia, closest side to Columbia, to Camden that there was. I'm sitting there, I've got the owner of the tent company, I've sold him. He's like, okay, so what's the station? So I tell him, well, an AM radio, if you know anything about AM radio, the lower your number is, the further your signal reaches. And then also there's grandfathered stations that get to keep their signal on 24 hours. Other stations have to turn their signal down at dark. So my station was 11:30.
Okay.
That's almost the top of the dial. Like
right.
there's not much above that.
Right.
So he goes to turn it on.
And he doesn't hear it.
He can't get it.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, this is, you know, Columbia is the only place that has any kind of business mass. I'm in the closest part of Columbia to the station.
And it's like.
And he can't get it. So
by the way,
like,
listeners that are like, what's AM radio, right? Like people are in their car listening to streaming podcasts, or maybe they're listening to FM, maybe,
yeah.
but probably rarely AM. So,
you know, and again, this is almost 20 years ago. And so I leave there. I think I went and get my nails done. I was just like super depressed. I go to this nail shop and there is like some type of robbery situation going on in the strip mall that I'm in. And I'm like, okay, I think it's time.
Yeah, right. I got to get out of this town.
This is not going well.
Right.
And so I went home to the apartment I was living in. My only friend was the manager of the Bojangles. Like, I mean, and we were nowhere near an age, but I mean, as like the only person I met that like I halfway knew. It was like the most, I just worked Super Bowl at the Texans, and now my friend is the guy
right.
who's managing the Bojangles, and I'm, you know, just lost my biggest sales lead. So I go back to the apartment, pack up my stuff, left the washer and dryer, got in my Mitsubishi Eclipse and drove to my parents, you know, kind of head down. And yeah, that was a very, very humbling point in my life. Like at that point I had, you know, I got to UNC, and from a job opportunity standpoint, things were just kind of happening. Like there was the article in the newspaper that had the opening for the videographer. I applied, I got it. Things just had kind of moved. And then I got into grad school. Things, you know, I got leveraged that to go to the Texans. I worked a Super Bowl, and now I'm back home at mom and dad's. And
right.
like, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. I felt like I turned down an NFL job, and I called him that day and I was like, hey, if that job's still open, I'll take it. They're like, well, we offered it to a girl from DC, but if she doesn't accept it, it's yours. Well, I'm the only person that doesn't have a job and turns down a job, right? So, like, all right, well, my brother's a landscape architect, so he's like, look, you can help me mow lawns till you figure out to pay the bills. So I remember, I'll never forget, I'm at this nice fancy house in a, you know, second home subdivision up in the mountains of North Carolina, and I'm helping him with some project, and the owners come out and they're talking to us like, oh wait, and I was like, I'm trying to tell them I'm going to work in the end, and they're looking at me like,
right,
this woman is weed eating our yard, like she's not going to be working in it, like she's delusional, like I think she's even lying that she ever worked in the NFL, like I mean she's out here with her brother. And and that's the, you know, my brother's one of my closest friends and support, like I wasn't the best weed eater, like I was definitely costing him money probably, but you know, he's like wanted to make sure I had something to keep me going until I could figure out what that was. And while I was at the Texans, we played the Panthers that year, and I met their staff. So I started having conversations with them like, hey, what can I do? They had a job opening. It ended up going to Mr. Richardson, had a contact that ended up going to him. And I'm like, well, I mean, I'd gone to Charlotte 4 times to interview for this entry level job, and it ends up going to this other kid. And so I asked him like, hey, can I just work game days until I figure out, because I knew I wanted to keep the NFL on my resume. I wanted to stay attached to a team somehow, because if I had that, I could sell that into how I was getting back in. So they agreed. So then I went to work. I unfortunately only worked with my brother for a couple of weeks, and I went to work for a State Farm insurance agent in my hometown that had let me work for him in college. So again, I'm just like filing stuff and not a real job, but he's again, probably costing him more than I'm benefiting him. So I did that Monday through Friday, and his daughter actually lived in Charlotte. So I would drive 3 hours down on Friday night, stay with his daughter until Sunday morning, go to work at the Panthers, and then drive 3 hours back on Sunday night just to stay connected and invested in the NFL. And, so I did that all season, and, you know, living back home with mom and dad is tough after you've fully been away. My mom, you know, my dad sees me as about 5 years old at this time. So, you know, I need to play and like be taught everything. My mom sees me as a teenager, and I need to be instructed on how to iron and fold clothes and participate. And so I was ready to figure out what gets me somewhere else. Like, you know, I'm too old to be living with my parents. I've been away too long. I can't do this. So I took a job with Octagon.
The marketing company?
The sports marketing company out of Connecticut. I interviewed with the Bills and the Browns prior to that. And now I say, fortunately, I didn't get those jobs because I'm much more grateful to be in Atlanta than in Cleveland or Buffalo. Each of those, you know, the guy at the Browns is like, we hired someone local, but I'd like to recommend you to my friend who's at the Bills. I'm like, well, that'd be great. Cause at the time I'm like, yeah, I'll go anywhere I want to work in the NFL. And, so then I'm working for BMW on their Drive for the Cure program. So they took, I think there were 6 of us or 7 of us, and we ran a fleet of 20 BMWs that were decorated for breast cancer. And we took them around the country. And so we worked 6 weeks, and then we got a week off. And so it was like 7 days a week for 6 weeks, and then you got a week off. And so about the 5th week, we came through Atlanta, and this job was open. I interviewed while we were here.
Where did you find it?
Teamwork, probably. I think was where it was at. Teamwork was one of the early job sites. It's still running. I'm assuming that's where it was. And at the time, Algie Crumpler was a player here. So Algie was one of my closest friends in college because I worked for the football team when he was playing. So I worked for the North Carolina football team when Julius Peppers, Algie Crumpler, all of those guys were part of that team. So Algie had taken my resume and delivered it to them. And so I interviewed when we were in New Orleans. I remember sitting, we were at a hotel. I think the hotel was on Bourbon Street, I remember sitting by the soda machine doing my interview in the hallway because we shared rooms with people. So I had to go sit out in the hallway to have my interview. And I got the call in Atlanta to interview in person here. And then we journeyed on, and I was down south of Tampa when I got the call that they offered the job. I flew out and came here, and I've been here for, this is my 18th season. So the journey getting here is way more excited than probably the journey since I've been here. I got here, you know, Michael Vick was our coordinator.
What was your title?
Coordinator of Corporate Partnerships.
Okay.
That's what I came in as.
Right. And what is it today?
Vice President of Events and Game Experience. So okay. It's been quite the journey from there to here. I think the thing for anyone to take away that's wanting to get into sports is there's no one path.
Right.
Like, you just want to stay connected, and you want to have conversations with people that when you're there, like asking, you know, how did you get to where you are? What, you know, what are opportunities like within your organization? And I volunteered a lot. Like, I volunteered for the PR department when I was in Houston. They let me write one article a week. So I was in the customer service department. That wasn't really where I wanted to be, but I got an opportunity there. But while I was there, I made friends with the head of PR, and he agreed that I could write one feature article a week. So I took one player a week and wrote a feature article. And so that kind of diversified my experience. The corporate partnerships team let me work their events. So, and through that, I'm like, yeah, I really love the marketing side of the corporate partners, working with brands and understanding their challenges and bringing them to life. And so that's what I knew coming out of Houston. I wanted to try to get in that space after I'd chased my Stuart Scott dreams again to Camden, South Carolina, and didn't.
So that officially closed that.
Yeah.
Officially, like, okay, so, I'm not meant to be behind the microphone or the camera.
I don't want to do that. It was so so discouraging that I, you know, it's crazy when I went to UNC. My dreams have been all over the place. I, you know, ADHD when it comes to life goals, but I went wanting to be a judge. Then I wanted to be a war correspondent. Than Stuart Scott. So,
but that's the great thing about being young is that you don't have to make any kind of decision.
Yeah. And I think, I went over to SCAD last night we had a meeting over there, and just being back on a university campus excites me. Like, seeing, just learning and experiencing new things and trying new things. We were in a class where they were creating their own little show. It was their first time doing kind of directing and writing and doing little vignettes. And, you know, my school was amazing, but technology has changed a lot since I was in journalism school at UNC. And just to see the cool stuff they were working with there was inspiring. I'm like, man, maybe I'll go back to school again just for the fun of it. But no, they've got some great stuff going on over there.
Well, when I had this other business, I had to hire like a lot of people, right? And there were the people that showed up that were like indispensable, right? Which just sounds like how you showed up.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say to like everybody else, this is all you have to do is show up. Like, what can I do next? What can I do next? And like, those are the people that's like, the minute I have a promotion or a higher paying job or a friend who needs someone, that's the guy that I call. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's the path that you took. And I think today it's this whole thing about like, well, I don't know if I should take this, or I don't know how, like, if it's not worth enough money or whatever. And it's like, just if you just show up, like, how can I be of service today to whoever I'm working for? Employers love that.
Yeah. My dad always would tell me life is 90% showing up. You know, the other 10% you can figure out, but if you don't show up, like, and, you know, as middle school, I had a bunch of cheesy slogans written on my wall and little post-it notes in my bedroom, like
that you wrote or your dad wrote,
that I wrote, but just, and they still stick with me today. One of them was go all out or don't go out at all. And that's kind of how I live life. And sometimes that's, you know, there's, with every, you know, to quote Einstein, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Going all out, sometimes maybe you don't need to go as hard as I go in approaching some things, you know, like not everything needs to be attacked with 120%. Like, there's some things that people are like, you know,
right.
It's just a friendly competition. We don't need to, right. But you know, my team, we played Family Feud last week here at work for just a happy hour event. And I had I took us to Walmart to find costumes. We ended up in bald caps and mustaches, and you know, it was horrible. I definitely didn't pick out the costumes, but you know, we were definitely the most costumed team.
Right.
And so one of the ladies was like, I should have known better than to be on Tamika's team. Like this is what happens when you live go all out or don't go out at all to the fullest. But yeah, and another one was get better, not bitter. And I think that is really important. Like there's a lot of times, especially in work, I don't know why in middle school that resonated. I don't know what I was dealing with in middle school that felt appropriate. But you know, as you get into your career, there's a lot of critique. There's a lot of people with opinions. And if you look at it as getting better and not bitter, it'll help you a lot more in life. Bitter only hurts you. It doesn't hurt those that cause the bitterness, right? Like you're the only one left with the impact. So
how often do you meet someone that you recognize like, oh, well, that is the young me versus how many times you've worked with people that you were hoping would work out and you're like, oh, this is another young person that isn't quite there yet?
You know, one of the things about this role that I'm in now, I changed right at the beginning of the pandemic, that I miss is for the first 15 or 16 years of my career, I had an internship program and I was very close to it because I do believe that's the greatest place to impact someone's career is at the foundational level. Like what you teach them, the principles they, you know, by the time I get someone who's been full time somewhere else a few years, like it is hard to get them fired up and off. You know, with the Falcons, we have Falcons University where our rookies all go through it and they buy into the culture and the beliefs of what, you know, ultimately Mr. Blank wants us to be in the community and elsewhere. You get a free agent who comes in, you're trying to teach them this, it doesn't translate as well always. But the rookies, I mean, when you're in it from day one, and that's how I view that internship program, like to me, we've always pushed diversity, like diversity of thought, diversity of where did they come from, diversity of gender, diversity of race and ethnicity. And so now one of the things I'm most proud about is I have, you know, now it's probably upwards of 80 people that have come through that under me. And, you know, there's some of them that, like, I can't wait to see where their story goes. I mean, it's already been so amazing. They're all kind of off doing their own thing, but, you know, some stay in touch better than others. So I get to hear their journey a little more closely. And, those are the things that I'm most proud of for sure is just like, if my ripple in the pond doesn't ripple and help someone else, then it's not, you know, I've wasted my impact. And, you know, there's been people who've been that for me and I want to be that for others. And, just really proud of some of the people I've been able to work with over the years.
Who with this organization has been that for you?
Yeah, I've been here a really long time. So some of the people that have been that for me aren't here anymore. But I would say the person that's been here with me the longest and have been part of that is, you know, a guy like Rich McKay. Rich is invested a lot of time, one-on-one meetings, coaching. You know, unfortunately for me, I didn't have a lot of women that I could look up to. They weren't there. So I needed men who would advocate for women. And I think, you know, hopefully I can be different I can be an example for the next generation coming of that you can do it. But I didn't have that. And so I had men, whether it's Steve Cannon, Rich McKay, you know, I worked with Tim Zalowski, who's our head of revenue. I've worked with him my whole, not necessarily reporting to him, but I've worked alongside with him or reported to him or kind of back and forth through the years. And I've learned so much about business and marketing from him of just absorption. But from a leadership standpoint, I admire Rich has had some really tough days in this organization. If you look at some of the stuff he's had to lead through. And I can tell you that no matter how challenging some of the stuff we've been through the almost, you know, the 18 years, there was never a moment where, you know, there's certain people you work with and it's like, oh, avoid Matt today. He is, you do not head down. Here comes Matt. That kind of mentality, like because things were stressful or things were bad or the news media is killing us over name, whatever situation. That was never rich. Like in 2007, as heavy as the stuff we were dealing with was, Rich was the guy in the hallways cheerleading and like, guys, we're going to get through. Like, I know at home.
Was that the Michael Vick stuff you mean?
I know at home he was stressed to death. Like, I mean, that there was just stuff that no one prepares for that, right? You don't want to see any of that happen. But he was so strong for those of us in the office. And I've mentioned it to him multiple times. Like, I don't, you know, and we've had different things that we've gone through in the 18 years. And at no point have I ever felt like you need to walk on pins and needles around Rich. And to be able to say that about anyone, like, that you've known for 18 years, that there was never a day that I can say, now there's days where we lose and it's like, you know, we shouldn't be cheering because we just lost yesterday and we're trying to get back to focus on the next opponent. And your office has a little different vibe, but there's never been a day where I could say, as a leader, I felt we had to behave differently because the leader couldn't handle the situation we were in. And that's a big, now being a leader, that's a really big statement. And that takes a different kind of person that can put on that strong face and go out and be the person to rally his people. And so I have a ton of admiration for that. And then Steve has been, you know, with us, I think now 6 years, and few people have challenged me like Steve. Few people have advocated for me like Steve, of just challenging me to think differently about how I lead and what it means and the value I can provide to the organization and what culture means to an organization. And you know, he's a West Point guy, and you know that is at the top of leadership development. And so I've really enjoyed working with both of them, and through the journey, you know, a guy named Jim Smith's the one who hired me, and I wouldn't be where I'm at today without Jim. He's no longer with us. He left here to go to Ohio State, but I was with Jim for 12 years, and you know, he thinks differently. He's the marketer at his core, and just how we approach marketing. And but you know, Jim is more like family to me. Like, he still, you know, checks on me and like cares about me personally. I, you know, have been part of all four of his kids' lives. You know, he's more like, he's not old enough to be my dad, but he's my industry dad. Like, he's right. He doesn't care to have the hard conversations with me. He doesn't care to hold me accountable, but he's also going to love me like none of the others as well. Like, he will challenge me like anyone, you know, like a parent would do, but he'll also be protective and have your back. And so having a person like that will keep you honest, but also, you know, doesn't want to see you fail, is really important.
So we've got Elton coming tomorrow. How many events, because obviously there's only so many home games football wise, although I hear, do we have an extra one this year?
The NFL schedule has changed, so we don't have an extra home game. We have an extra regular season game. So we only had one preseason game.
Okay.
So we have normally we have 2 preseason, 8 regular.
Right.
We have 1 preseason, 9 regular.
Got it. Is there only 1 preseason moving forward, or is there 2?
No, so there's 3.
Right.
Total.
Right. There used to be 4, now there's 3.
Yeah, so 1 year you will have 1.
Right.
And 1 year you'll have 2.
Right.
And the years you have 1, you'll have an extra regular home.
Right. And then what about with the, like, have we played in London yet? I can't remember.
We played in London last year.
Right. So then shouldn't we get an extra, or so we only had 7 last year?
Yes.
Right. So you've got X amount of home games, and then how busy is the, like, how many events will happen here, let's say, from January to December?
So I don't just do Falcons. I don't just do United. I do all. So.
No, I know. That's why I'm asking you.
So that, and all, if I can't even honestly answer you on all, because I can tell you that we'll have probably close to 65 major events here this year, this calendar year. And a major is, you can buy tickets to it on Ticketmaster. So if you add in all,
then there's like corporate events, and I was here for the you were probably there. I was here for the what's the boxing thing that Matt does?
Which oh the Yes, the...
I can't think of the name of it.
The charity boxing event.
I was actually really excited because you guys hadn't been open that long and like it was on the floor. And I was like, I'm on the floor. This is amazing.
Yeah. So we'll do...
So that's not a major event because it's not a Ticketmaster.
Yeah. So a major event is publicly ticketed. When you add in the private events, is what we call the others. You know, this building is programmed somewhat like a factory. I mean, it's always open. As you know, we're here today. We don't technically have an event today, but you wouldn't know it when you pulled in because, you know, we're setting up for Elton John. Load in is a couple of days where it takes over the building. You know, we have an event here on Friday night, a private event. You know, United is finishing out their season. Then, you know, Falcons continues on. Then United starts right back in February or March, depending on if they have early games. The United MLS season starts in March. And then United runs from March till December. Hopefully, if we're in the championships, that's in December. And then Falcons runs, preseason starts in July. And, you know, if we're lucky to host home playoff games, that doesn't end till January. And so... Then basically we have event teams that try to fill in all the gaps, and we are a huge concert. So one thing people don't realize, we host more college football games in Mercedes-Benz Stadium than most colleges do on their home campus. So the average college schedule has 6 home games, and we have 7 college games at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So we are a busy college
football stadium. So you've got the kickoff, Chick-fil-A kickoff, that's 2 games. Mm-hmm. You've got one of the 4 BCS games.
We have a Georgia Tech home game.
You have 1 Georgia Tech home game.
Yep.
That's 3.
No, you just said a bowl game. One of the BCS games. That's 4.
Okay.
We have the Celebration Bowl, which is the HBCU.
Okay, Celebration Bowl.
And we have the Chick-fil-A...
formerly known as Peach Bowl.
Peach Bowl. And then
every few years you get the championship again.
Yeah.
Nice. So, as you heard me say to Mr. McKay, I'm a huge fan of what you guys do. As I said, I can't be at an event and not look at what's happening, not besides just the game experience. So just like I'm in the racing world, if I show up to your 5K, like I notice if your volunteers are extra nice versus like nobody knows where to park or you know what I mean? Like people that are invested in it. So you guys do such a good job. And I wouldn't tell you this because you're just sitting here, because I've been to other games. I've been to Hawks games. I've been to Braves games, and they do whatever they do. But when I had season tickets in 11 and 12, I loved it. I loved every part of it. I tried to get the most out of it. You know, a lot of times I did like the Find Freddy thing. I don't know if you still do that, but you know, I would look on my social media or Facebook or whatever and show up to that. Then you show up to, do we still call it Falcons Landing? What do we call it now? Backyard.
So we have Home Depot Backyard.
Yeah. And like there would be pre-stuff going on there and it would always be fun. Like I made a day of it. Mm-hmm. And then the game experience is a great game experience. Where I do feel like some of the other sports, it's over-marketed. They seem to maybe not exactly know what they want. And I just feel like I know I've been to other football stadiums, but I can just mostly speak to this experience. Because even before I had the season tickets, even in the years leading up, I was starting to go to more. Like 1 year I went to 1, then I went to 3, and then I was like, well, I'll just go ahead and buy season tickets. So just wanted to say, like, whatever you're doing is working.
Well, I appreciate it. We are... you know, one of Arthur's core values is listen and respond. And I always tell people, you can't stay still. Like, you're either moving forward or backwards. Like, life doesn't stay still. People are passing you if you think you're still, so you're going actually backwards. And so innovation is incredibly important. And if you're innovating without listening, you're not hitting the target. So it's been really important for us to connect with the fans. The surveys that get sent out are really important that people answer, that we take them seriously. Like, we look into the details. We try to action against that and have a plan. Hopefully if you attend Falcons games this year, you will see a difference in our playlist from a music standpoint. People were very passionate about music, and so we went out and surveyed them, and We had 1,400 people respond, want to be a part of this study, and that's a big number of our season ticket member accounts, because from a seat standpoint, you don't have each account represents, you know, four seats on average, two to four. So to get that kind of feedback was really important, and it was interesting. They basically told us they wanted to hear music from 1985 to 2005.
Right.
And so we had to redo our playlist. Like, so you will come to Falcons games and you'll hear, you know, classics, and you know, you'll hear Atlanta music. You will hear stuff from the 90s. Probably everyone who was in college and high school at that time will be very happy.
Right.
And then we'll sprinkle in some of the current stuff. But they didn't want, they wanted us to kind of flip the equation on how much current we were playing versus.
Right.
And because, you know, we did studies around music, people's music curiosity peaks at like age 30, and they want to stay within what that music.
I have not bought new music in a very long time, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and so you're not unique. And right. So those are the things, like.
But then you also, but then you legitimately believe that was the best time. Yeah. Like, well, clearly this was the best time in music. So I went to high school in the 80s. Okay.
So my old boss is in his 50s now. I don't he's probably around 53-ish. And I remember I was roughly 30 at the time, and he would have been closer to 40. And he's like, tell me one artist out of the 90s that will, you know, this is early 2000s, maybe 2005, 2006 time frame. He's like, tell me one artist out of the 90s that'll fill a stadium in, you know, in 20 years or whatever. Right. 'Cause he was so like, the 80s is the genre, you know, and that's how passionate people are about their time of music. And now, you know, the only reason people fill stadiums is because people miss it and they want to hear it. Like, that's why your stadium artists are usually older. And they're not current,
right?
For the most part, it's really hard for current because they haven't built that fan base yet. And so it's always easier for a legacy artist to come back and do a stadium tour because people are missing them. They want that nostalgia from that period of time they wanted to go back to. And music is really capturing a period of time, a period of memories, a period of life. And so really focus in on what is the narrative music is telling in our game day experience based on the fans that are attending. So as we look at United's music, it is different than Falcons because the age difference is different for that audience.
They're a younger audience.
But interestingly, you know, they came into the building, you know, they were like, say they were 30 years old average when they came in, but now they've all stayed. And so now they've eight, you know, now they're roughly, you
right.
know, early mid 30s. And so they're even getting older and more mature in their, so you got to always stay attuned to who's your audience.
Right.
But that's the key, I think, to the successful programming. If I'm programming your birthday party or I'm programming someone else's birthday party, you want it for you, right? You want the music, you want the artist, you want the food. If I gave you, I'm like, well, this was graded A+, but it was created for this individual. You're like, but that's not what I want. So it's not going to resonate. And so if we don't understand our audience and we don't understand what they want, we're never going to hit the target on what is appropriate for them. And a lot of people can tell you what you should do. And but if those aren't the people you're catering to, and that's where, interestingly, our digital audience is a very different audience than who's in the building. Digital is more mass audience. It's the mainstream. The building is only 72,000 people. And that,
you say only as if that's not a massive number, but I understand.
But compared to
people who are like around the world watching, sure.
And that are Falcons fans, you know, that follow that, you know, our social media account is numbers are, you know, on each platform somewhere around 1 million. So that's a way bigger number and much more diversified. So what we would do on social is going to be different than what we're going to do in the stadium, because our average age in the stadium, you know, is somewhere around 50 years old, you know.
That's so, me.
So you are a different consumer than...
I'm glad I'm finally the target audience for something.
Than the, you know, the 16-year-old that's right. on TikTok or whatever the consumer is on each of those platforms. Right.
Well, here's what's fascinating that I've talked to some other guests about is I was a huge sports fan as a kid. I played football and I watched sports. You know, ESPN was the best thing in the world for me because something was always on. And as I got older, football became kind of the only thing I followed. But I certainly knew a lot about the entire league and rules. And my kids have not watched a football game from start to finish, but they know who Mahomes is, right? They identify with players and not teams. So how is that for you guys sort of, and I do this, and there's plenty of people who bring their kids and their kids are hardcore Falcons fans, I know, but I'm just saying that didn't exist. There was no way you would know who Steph Curry was, but not know the team he plays on and the other guys he plays with. But now a kid could recognize Steph or LeBron or, you know, or just Matt Ryan even, you know, whoever's on their fantasy team.
Yeah, I would say there was a bit of that when we were growing up. I mean, there were definite stars that were bigger than their team. Bo Jackson was a star apart from, Deion was a star apart from what team he was on, but it wasn't for the same. Fantasy changed sports in general. And there's nothing bigger than fantasy football. Like, you know, there's fantasy everything.
Are you allowed to play?
We're allowed to play. We can't win. We can't win anything. We can play like friendly fantasy.
Do you play fantasy?
I have for years. I do not currently.
Okay.
Like, it is. Did you
typically draft Algie Crumpler?
I won't comment on my drafting strategy. I'll just say I have been a winner in my fantasy leagues. I take any competition very, very seriously.
Well, clearly do. So it's funny because I hadn't heard his name in a bit, but I remember I did have him a couple of years. And I have learned, and this probably makes me a bad fan or a bad fantasy player, but I'm telling you, the last couple of years I auto draft because it takes all the emotion out, right? And if you're live in person, then of course that's half of it. That's trash talking. But if it's 100% virtual, I will let it auto and then play around, right? Yeah. Like during the year, like the very first week, I forgot who I picked up, but there was somebody that nobody had and I snagged him and like, you know, traded a kicker or whatever. And like, then you get into the waiver wire. But during the actual draft, like if it's a choice, it was like, am I going to pick all Falcons? No. But if it gets to me, and there's a choice between Roddy White and a guy that's close to him, I'm always going to take Roddy White.
Yeah.
Right?
So I think the funny thing about fantasy is, have you ever gone to a charity casino night?
Yeah, sure. In my lifetime, yeah.
So you're probably way better at craps or roulette or...
Right.
What at the So the thing that you can't replicate with fantasy to what Terry Fontenot or whomever else is dealing with is... You're at the charity craps table, right? Like your moves don't matter that, like
right.
Your stakes aren't that high. Like, but when you go to Vegas and you want to play craps, you lose all your money on one. You know, one seven is taking away the whole board. Well, right. In the charity game, that's not
right.
Oh well, I guess you know my night's over and I can't have any more fun. But you know, it's so funny that I think one of the biggest things fantasy has done is made. A lot of, you know, we already had the armchair quarterbacks. Now right. We have the armchair general managers. They're like, you know, I was best in, I've won, you know, 7 years straight or, you know, I saw, you know, I knew his potential. I could have drafted. And so that to me is the comical part of fantasy is that all these people feel like because they were able to outsmart. I mean, who are you playing against? Like, right. I don't even know who your friend group is. Like,
they might be really dumb.
Like you may have orchestrated a league of people that have no football IQ, and so your trophy is a
right.
You know, is an all everyone gets a trophy concept. But no, that to me has been the interesting thing of fantasy is how many experts it's made. I think fantasy has been amazing for the game. I don't think it's been challenging for teams. Like the amount of people, and that continues to help our TV numbers as we talked at the beginning about how strong the NFL TV is because. You care about that matchup that you wouldn't have watched.
Of course.
Because you've got the receiver that, you know, it's Monday night and you're going up against the guy and you need that rushing touchdown to get you to beat your opponent. And you're going to stay up until 11 or 12 to make sure that your running back gets right. that handoff.
But again, I do feel like in the past, like I have zero attachment to the Chiefs and Broncos, but I would watch their 4 o'clock NBC game because that's how we consumed it. We watch football. Like the Falcons were always on at one, yeah. right? Maybe once a year we play the Seahawks or whoever, but we're the 1 o'clock game. And then I'm going to watch the 4 o'clock game of whoever. And like, cool, I get to watch Elway, but it's not like I was tuning in to watch Elway. Mm-hmm. I was watching because that's how we consumed football. And the specifics of the fantasy just make it more so that like...
But you weren't invested. You watched.
Right. But now I'm super invested. Right.
You are invested in, and it doesn't, the funny thing, it doesn't take money for you to be invested. It's
right.
Pride.
Even if it's a free league, right.
It's like, you just want to be your friend.
Right.
You want to have that badge of that my team is better.
Right. But I have found if you do a free league, you will always inevitably have a couple people that aren't setting their picks. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah. you got to do like the minimum 20 dollar league. Cause then maybe one guy forgets, but not more.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we've tried the MLS fantasy, and that one is hard to keep your roster. I mean, you've got to be. There's so many games, and there's so many.
Yeah, I tried basketball 1 year. It was way too hard.
But the cool thing about fantasy is I think it does help you have a greater understanding of the rosters and the team and appreciation for stories of players that, you know, it is, fantasy combined with Hard Knocks has really elevated some guys' stories, you know.
Right.
You're pulling for that guy who's the fringe roster guy. You want to find the seventh round draft pick that no one knew, but you knew because you watched him in college and you knew that he was that, and he's going to overperform. And I think that's what's been cool about fantasy in helping some of these guys' stories and brand some of the guys on your team. But
did you watch Hard Knocks this year?
I did not watch Hard Knocks this year.
He's a hoot and a holler, that guy.
I have not got to catch up on.
Yeah,
on
he's
it.
That head coach is a hoot and a holler. All right, well, listen, I like to end with the Atlanta favorites, so I'm going to set up my camera for that.
Oh, no, I'm going to get in trouble.
You can't get in trouble. There's no wrong answers. That's what I always say. It's the Atlanta favorites quiz. There are no wrong answers.
Okay, I will remember that.
Okay.
Save that line for when somebody tells me I picked the wrong thing.
Exactly. What is your go-to order at Waffle House?
Ooh, go-to order at Waffle House. So I have food envy anywhere I go. Am I looking at...
It's just, you can look at me, it's fine.
Okay. So I have food envy anywhere I go. So I end up ordering way too much. And so going to get an omelet, going to get a waffle, going to get the hash browns covered and chunked.
Okay.
And then I'm going to regret whatever I got when I see what you got. And I probably won't eat but half of what I got. But... I prefer the buffet at Waffle House than having to pick from the menu.
So that's anywhere you go, whatever you order, you always have envy over what the other people are having.
Yes. Yes. It is a real thing. But I love food, but I'm not the greatest person at ordering. So I do really well at like tasting events, because then I don't end up in that scenario of where I felt like I got the wrong thing.
Gotcha. What is your current favorite place to eat in Atlanta?
Well, if we talk about ordering, I'm going to go with a classic. So I go to Silver Skillet for breakfast.
Okay.
And there was a while there. The pandemic's kind of disrupted this a little bit, but there was a while if I went to Silver Skillet, they didn't bring me a menu because I ordered the same thing every time I went. I would get a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich on toast and a half order of French toast.
Okay.
With a half and half iced tea.
And do you have a favorite dinner place?
I do have a favorite dinner place, and it kind of goes with this theme. Gun Show is my favorite restaurant, and I like it because you get to try a lot of things. It's better than a picture menu. They bring the food to your table, and you get to decide if you like it. So I'm a huge Kevin Gillespie fan and big fan of Gun Show. I was there on Friday night, actually.
First guest ever on this program, Atlanta Podcast,
wow.
was Kevin Gillespie.
Well, there we have something in common. I'm a big Gillespie fan.
Yeah, he's awesome. And I got to interview him again. I got to go to one of those, speaking of Waffle House, he does the Waffle House, like, they make it fancy. So him and Chris Hall have this, like, cook-off inside of Waffle House. They do
okay.
it. I think the pandemic, I don't know if it's back, but I went to it, I want to say 2019? Maybe it was, I can't remember when I went. Anyway, if you love Waffle House, as I do, it was a treat. So go to that if you get the chance.
I'm definitely a breakfast 24 hours person.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. My house, we do it. My kids, cereal, like French toast, like any of those things can be eaten anytime.
Yep.
Publix or Kroger?
Definitely Publix. Publix has been a partner of ours for like, since I've been here, and I've spent, I did a mobile tour around the state of Georgia for many years, going to different Publixes with Freddie and cheerleaders and doing a gift with purchase program. So typically, if you lived somewhere in Georgia and you could tell me where your closest Publix intersection was, I knew where you lived.
Really?
And that's how. And I had to do these appearances back in the day with an atlas. I didn't have a GPS. And so we've come a long ways. If I had Waze 20 years ago when I was trying to find, you know, various Publix in small town Georgia, I would be in better shape than I was then. But I have spent a lot of times in a Publix grocery store.
Okay. I take MARTA blank.
I take MARTA blank. I haven't taken MARTA in a long time because I live within walking distance to work. I moved to where I didn't have to get on the interstate.
Is this where you come to work every day?
This is where I come to work every day. And so I tried when we built the stadium to get in a position where transportation was not going to be an issue, because for 11 years, I drove to Flowery Branch every day from Brookhaven.
Oof.
So MARTA wasn't an option, and I would have taken MARTA every day,
right,
if I could have avoided that 45-mile commute. So when I had the opportunity, I moved as close to the office as I could. So unfortunately, I wish MARTA was an option, but there's not a path from my house to here.
Okay. Outcast or Goody Mob?
There is no question. I am a huge Outkast fan. One of the coolest people I've ever met in my life is Andre Benjamin, and I'm a big boy fan. And I remember they came to Chapel Hill when I was in college. I saw them at the University of Georgia in Stegman Coliseum. But I'm Outkast is one of my favorite groups, and Dre's one of my favorite people in life.
Okay. Do you currently watch the show Atlanta?
So, I'm not the greatest at keeping up with TV in, real time, but I am an Atlanta fan. So I haven't got to see this season's I'm a little behind. I know it just came back out. So I usually binge, you know, I watch a whole season in a Saturday of TV. But if you go back, there is an episode where they're going to hell in Georgia.
Right.
Now, if you've seen the episode,
I've seen them all.
And, they're in the car, they're on their way to Helen, and
for the Oktoberfest thing.
And it's, you know, they're kind of weirdly going to Helen, and he's like trying to tell her about when he went to Helen in the fourth grade, I think.
Right.
And he tells her, I went to Helen, Georgia on this field trip in fourth grade, and Tamika Rich threw up. I don't know where they got Tamika Rich in that line, but I don't know that there's two of us in the world, but my name was the vomiting fourth grader. So that's my Atlanta connection.
That is unreal. Well, I will go back and watch that episode just to see that. Maybe I will post something fun on social with it even. I was going to ask who your favorite character on that program was.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of just the overall show. I don't know if I can give a favorite character, but the overall show, like just when they went to London was great. I'm a big fan, and I love kind of what he's been able to do with just telling the story of Atlanta and the way he tells it, and it become a huge success out of this market.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, Donald Glover is it's hard to not be a Donald Glover fan.
Let me pull up. I have a couple questions I've added to this. So yeah, I think this is the last season.
Yes.
They just started last night, which I have not seen.
I have not got to see this season yet.
But this season I've caught up to this point. It's out there, man. It is out there. Pull up my note here. Because I just added a couple. Okay. Here's a good one for you. What is your favorite festival in Atlanta?
Favorite festival in Atlanta? It's a good question. Know if it qualifies for a festival, but one of my favorite things to do in Atlanta is the Lantern Parade.
On the Beltline?
On the Beltline. Atlanta United was part of the Lantern Parade for many years. And that, to me, is one of the coolest. Like, just seeing everyone come out, line the belt line, the effort of the artists that create the lanterns. Like, it is a very, like, you know, I love the Jazz Festival. I love the Dogwood Festival, all of those, but they don't feel as unique as walking down the belt line with, you know, these massive Chinese like lanterns. And it's usually in the fall of the year, and it's one of the things I think is just cool and unique to Atlanta is just the culture that comes out and the different types of culture and being able to be a part of those. And that was one of my cool Atlanta United memories was the MM Park Lantern Festival.
What is the best concert you've ever seen in Atlanta?
Oh, best concert I've ever seen in Atlanta. I'm probably going to have to say I got to see Jay-Z at the Hangar Tour. So I don't know if you remember the Hangar Tour. He did, I want to say, 7 cities in 17 hours.
What?
And so I saw him. So he was called the Hangar Tour.
So he just stopped.
He just stayed in air. Basically, it was.
How many songs did he do before he took back off?
It was about an hour show.
Wow.
So I saw him in Atlanta at, I think it was called Earthlink Live at the time. I think it was Earthlink Live. And it was him and Memphis Bleek. We saw him at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
So.
Was it the first stop of the day?
I think we were like somewhere in the middle. So he had done somewhere at night and then he'd flown to Atlanta and he had Atlanta at like 6 in the morning.
Earthlink Live. Where is that?
It's over the 17th Street and 17th and Spring. Now it's, I can't remember the name of it now. It's changed names several times. You know, the.
It's not Center Stage.
Center Stage, yeah. Center Stage.
So it was Center Stage, became Earthlink, now it's back to Center Stage. Because when I grew up, it was Center Stage.
Yeah, it was Earthlink Live at a point when I think when Jay-Z was there. I'm pretty sure that was the
right
name
when of it. When the internet 1.0 was naming things.
Yes, and it's changed. It was I think it was something else before it went back to Center Stage.
Right,
but it had a few names in the mid 2000s, and this was probably 2006, as the .com boom was declining. And,
right, so like. Doors opened at like 4:30 or something crazy.
Yeah, I remember it was crazy. Like my friend came over. It was an AT&T event, so they sponsored the Hangar Tour. So it's only 500 people, and you had to get your tickets basically from AT&T or they partnered with the radio station. And so my roommate worked for AT&T's agency, activation agency, and he was a huge Jay-Z fan, but he couldn't go. Because he had to work college game day, I think, somewhere. And so he gave us his two tickets. And I remember it was like, we're getting up when most people were like finishing at the club, but we're getting up to put on like basically like club attire to go to this Jay-Z concert and go stand in line, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning to enter, you know, what is now Center Stage. But it was, I mean, to see an artist like that in the peak of their career in such a small, intimate environment at 6 o'clock in the morning will forever be a memory that I'll cherish.
That is definitely one of the best answers I've heard to that question.
Yeah.
So the final question is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
Ooh, that is a good question. Let me think on it a minute. I think... I'm going to say you should... Have you had Julie Hogg from Wish?
No.
Wish, the shoe store?
No, I have not.
Yeah, so Julie is a good friend that runs Wish.
And I would love to.
Wish is a cultural hub of Atlanta and, sneaker sneaker influencer setting place in Atlanta. And she does an amazing job. And it's one of the few... Her and the founder, Lauren, it's one of the few... sneaker shops, you know, that are ran by two women. So it's a really cool
story. I didn't even know they were run by two women.
Yep. So she's awesome. And, obviously I'm a sneakerhead and love my Jordans. I'm a UNC grad. So I'm always going to be a Jordan at heart. But Julie is an awesome person and doing great things in the fashion and sneaker world.
So we'll do bonus. So describe to the listener what color we're wearing today, what color Jordans these are.
So these are Jordan 1's red and black patent leather. So these are I got these for Falcons kickoff this year. So I have a lot of red and black.
I was going to say, these are more Falcons. This is not the original red and black. This is more of a Falcons red and black.
Yeah. So it's not the original Chicago's, but it's the patent leather throwback.
And how long does it take you to decide which Jordans to wear in the morning?
It all depends on the colors. I try to diversify. I do have way too many red. I'm a red person. I go into a store. I'm like, a bull with a matador. I'm drawn to the red flashing light. But I try to buy sneakers based on the color palette so that in the morning, if I'm wearing pink, I know which, I'm wearing the 3s because that's my pink option, or if I'm wearing, so I try to stick to colors so it's a little bit easier and not, you know, double down on the same colors. But with red, because of Atlanta United and the Falcons both being red, I've got a significant investment in red sneakers. So today when I was trying to put together what I was going to have on for the podcast, I figured red and black was the best option. So,
all right. Well, thanks for doing this.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been great talking to you. And, you know, I love anything that supports the Atlanta culture and drives Atlanta. So
me too. And that was Tamika. Thank you so, so much for joining me. I appreciate you. As I said, here we are every bloody Friday bringing you a new episode. Please tell a friend. We want to keep growing this thing. And the best way to grow a podcast is tell your friends. I love the ATL podcast. You can also find us on Instagram at ATL podcast. I know there are a few Atlanta podcasts out, but we are at ATL podcast. I have great, great episodes for you to come. Go back through the catalog. We've been doing this since 2017. You're going to find some great, great interviews. Really excited about what we have and what we're going to be bringing you soon. Love you. Miss you. Mean it. I have got to run.